Hey, everybody. Welcome to Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR podcast, all things PR, marketing, blah, blah, blah. Joining me, as always, is Jen Renahan, our esteemed COO. Hello.
Hello.
And Matt Williams, our VP.
John.
Hello, Matthew. This is not Have a Beer With because it's a dry January. I'm actually participating, which is a bummer. See how that goes. We'll pick up the Have a Beer With segment starting in February. Today, we want to tackle a few things that have been in the news lately that have been really been interesting in the sports world. And First off, guys, I want to talk a little bit about the Russell Wilson in Denver Bronco controversy, right? And to, for those of you who aren't totally aware, Russell Wilson, the quarterback of the Denver Broncos, it came out that the team went to his representatives several months ago in October and asked that he remove an injury clause in his contract. And if he didn't, they were going to bench him, and he didn't. And fast forward a few months later, they benched him, and it came out. And then Wilson addressed the media, handled it quite well, I thought, and really the organization came away with some serious egg on its face, and as did the head coach, Sean Payton, who seems to be doing that more and more frequently these days. So really my thought was circles back right away to the public relations team at the Broncos and whether or not they were kind of in the loop from the start, whether they had to react, when did they get caught up to speed on this? Because I think the best organizations in sports have public relations at the grown-up table.
Right.
And many, many do not.
There's no doubt about that. I think you can point to any number of circumstances in our careers or whatever where, you know, you have been caught off guard and it's much more difficult to put your best foot forward if you are in the decision-making process or at least observing the decision-making process from the very beginning and can have some input on telling folks what will happen if you do X and what will happen if you do Y. From a public relations standpoint, then I think the organization is much better served.
It doesn't appear that they were involved. I feel like you would have...
I agree, because it wasn't really a plan. It was a story that broke. A plan would have been, how do we really get in front of this?
Right? And he was, you know, standing up in the locker room talking about this. It seemed very reactionary on his part.
Yeah, right? I would agree. Yeah. Well, and then I think Russell, to his credit, handled it quite well and, you know, addressed it and talked about wanting to be a Bronco and wanting to play and was just really honest and seemed to be stating the facts, which really painted the organization in a corner. And whatnot. And
I think it's interesting too. If you look, there's all these stories now coming out and they're all different. Like about Sean Payton not knowing and him saying it was a football decision, and a players association issuing a letter. There's all these different stories out there now. And it doesn't seem like the team has even really come forward since to put out a legit statement or anything really from what I've seen, just in looking at all of the news coverage.
Well, and the more that there's mixed reactions like this, right, Matt? I mean, the more that it just doesn't bode well for the organization.
No doubt.
No controls put in place. There's no concise messaging put in place. And that really puts the PR team in a box, doesn't let them do their job effectively and makes them scuffle for information, which they've made to this day, as far as we know, not know everything that happened.
And the organization as a corporation or as a group seems to be hunkered down, right? They seem to be just trying to weather the storm and get through this, whereas the PR department has to go out every day and facilitate the media for Russell, and they have to, in theory, look out for the organization's best interests as well. But it's difficult to do when they're just going to hunker down and let something ride while, you know, everybody's making assumptions one way or the other.
Well, look, effective public relations in any organization, in any industry, is critical to the reputation and the way the organization is viewed. Effective public relations at a sports team is very challenging. It's part science, it's part art. You need to really understand that there are several factions that PR people have to have, team PR people have to have a relationship with, that are often at odds with each other. And that's the locker room, the coaching staff, the front office, and the media. And at any given time, all four of those might not trust one another. And yet they need to trust the public relations team. And it's very, very challenging. It can be done. But the PR person, in order to do that effectively, needs to earn the trust of all those parties and then be in the know and be equipped and have the information they need, or else you're scuffling, you're backpedaling, you're not really known, you're not able to plan or put a plan into effect.
That's right. And it, you know, you put yourself in the position of those guys, and they are going to be forced to answer questions that they may not have the answers to. And that's where it comes to the art that you talked about, John, is that, you know, you've got to know, you know, when you can answer questions and when you say, I can't answer that question for you. And it's a difficult place to be in.
And your experiences in the organizations you guys were in, were there plans in place for, say, a player, speaking out of turn, or, you know, contract breach, whatever? Were there actual PR
sometimes
plans?
Sometimes, right? Yeah. I mean, I think different organizations handle things differently. I will say this. Matt and I have not been with a team in a very long time.
Yeah.
And it's a much more challenging job now than it was when we were there because of social media.
Right.
Because of the immediacy in the digital age. People tweeting, reacting to that. News, 24-hour news cycle. Back then, there was much more time to plan. So I'll give a couple of examples. When a tragedy hit, when I was with the Cleveland Indians and we had athletes die in a boating accident during spring training, we had plenty of time to plan. We were all devastated. The team was devastated. But news wasn't traveling at the speed of sound. No one was tweeting from the accident. There was none of that. We got to plan it and handle it appropriately, give the players the cover they needed, but also give the media what they needed, be sensitive to the family. So that was back then, and that was feels like 100 years ago. That was 1993. So, and then there's, you know, other times like with Cal Ripken and the streak. You know, he and I really did most of that planning. And to the team's credit, they let us. There wasn't a rush to control who's Cal talking to, what's he doing. They knew he was a strong, incredibly popular international figure, knew how to put a sentence together, knew he had the team's best interests at heart, and trusted me enough to kind of like coordinate that stuff. But certainly, there are other times when I was with the Washington Redskins, namely when a few things came down with the defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, that the owner didn't handle properly, where you're scuffling. But that's when the relationships kick in. That's when I was able to go to Coach Nolan and say, hey, Mike, here's the deal. Here's how I think we should handle it. And he listened because we built that rapport. And that was certainly a strained organization where front office, locker room, coaches, and we're all kind of together in unison against ownership.
Yeah.
So that was a really unique circumstance.
Yeah, I think you touched on one big thing there, John, and that is the difference between now and then, in that, you know, building some equity with reporters and media outlets, it helped because they would not rush to judgment at that point. They would wait to check in with you first and say, is this accurate? Or do you guys have a comment on it? At least now that doesn't exist.
Right.
Everything is reactionary now. It's so much more difficult to be proactive now, especially in a locker room where every single player is his own media outlet.
Yeah, and then that's kind of what I was seeing too, where like it just seems like when reporters are putting out their pieces, it's very speculative. It's sources say, but how you wonder how much are they going and checking with sources and just instead of, you know, they're putting things out and it just causes all this confusion then
for
the public.
Sure. And I think doubling down on that, like making it even more challenging, is the fact that the media itself is less trusted these days, let's face it, as a society as a whole. And the teams rely on them less, right? Like back in the day, we needed our beat reporters to tell our story. Now teams have their own podcasts, their own digital platforms, their own social media platforms. They're breaking their own reporters. That's right. So they're breaking their own news. So it makes it that much more challenging, I think, for the reporters and for the teams and for building those relationships. But going back to our original point, having the public relations team at what we like to call the grown-up table, in with the highest of executives at early on, you see that very regularly, I think, with the Baltimore Ravens here locally.
Yeah. I mean,
they're incredibly well-respected NFL franchise, and I know Kevin Byrne, the former head of communications, and Chad Steele, the current head of communications, are always at that grown-up table. And you see it in the way they respond to things, the way they think through things, the way there always seemingly is a plan. And, you know, I think that's important for all teams to consider, and I don't think they're always considering that.
Yeah, I think you can point to – I know I can point to several instances where, you know, if you're not at that table and decisions get made, and I don't want to throw them under the bus, but, you know, you get lawyers involved and you get team counsel involved, and their best recommendation is to stay quiet when you know you could have – someone in the organization could have resolved the matter.
Really good point. Yeah, I mean, when public relations advice and legal advice rarely agree, and legal advice almost always wins. Why? Because it's friggin' scary.
That's right.
Like, don't say anything. Yeah. You're going to go to jail. Yeah, circle the wagon.
Right. If there's a relationship between everyone, right? Everyone's at that table, even the lawyers, and you all come to an agreement on how to approach.
There's always a happy medium. Right. And I think going back to the Ravens example, you had a president, you have one now, and Dick Cass and now Sashi Brown, that really understand the need to be, you know, forward-facing, have something to say. Don't shut down the doors. Don't circle the wagons. Sometimes you can't say everything, but you can say something. Yeah. And they've kind of mastered that, I think.
It's interesting. I would like to know, you know, from a team perspective, what their planning process is for this stuff. Going back to the point why it's even more important to have plans because of social media. You have social media policies, you have all of this, but, you know, every business has a crisis plan, right? So are teams approaching it in that way where they have an actual plan, trigger who to call, who
They may have a plan, but they may not always work that plan. And right. I think that's the thing that you really have to be beholden to is if you're going to have this plan and you're going to put it into effect, then you have to work it every time. Mm-hmm. And there have to be different versions of it too. Because some stuff has to be happening like that. It's awfully hard to be that methodical about your plan when you have to turn on a dime.
In some cases, there's an archaic view inside the four walls, not just of sports franchises, but organizations as a whole. I remember Pat Riley once used the word a peripheral opponent to describe the media. They're a peripheral opponent, right?
Right.
And some people view them as the enemy, and we don't need to talk to them, and screw them. They'll get information. That's always going to come back and hurt you, right? I mean, no, they are. You can't view them that way and then react like a crazy person when something is written or said on the air that you don't like. Right. Build the relationship. There's still going to be things you don't agree with because they don't work for you, right? But build the relationship, work through things, and put your best foot forward to get your message out there. And the more you treat them with the respect, and the more the vast majority of journalists that are treated well, treated with respect, responded to accordingly, are going to give you the benefit of the doubt as the organization to then help make sure your side of things is being told.
And then tell your positive stories when you need it.
That's right. I mean, you bring it back full circle. Now you wonder if the Broncos management and ownership is upset with the way they're being covered. And, you know, they can't really be upset about it because this was all thrown at them at the PR department from the very beginning with no inclination.
Well, and again, going back, we know nothing.
We
know nobody. We know nothing. They may look. The Broncos PR team may have been there, and just didn't handle it great, or they may have been there and then been told to shut up. That has happened to me. Believe me.
That's right.
You know, so we don't really know what the heck happened there. However, we do know that one lawyer called another lawyer about a contract thing. Mm-hmm. What happened after that was clearly
that's exactly right.
Not the execution of a perfect communication strategy, right? True. So what happened there, we don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
And the whole social media thing goes to a whole nother level. Once again, guys, thank you. You're listening to Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR podcast. Usually have a beer with, but it's dry January, so we'll pick up the beers in February with Jen Renahan, our COO, and Matt Williams, our VP of Media Relations. We're talking a little bit of sports here. Wanted to touch on this last weekend, the Ravens, the team we like talking about and we love so much and doing such a great job, having a phenomenal, phenomenal season. It's crazy. They honored Ray Rice. And, you know, Ray has been through a lot. And we know that Ray, you know, was seen horrifically punching his wife in an elevator years ago. And it ended, effectively ended his career, his playing career, and alienated him in a lot of ways, all for perfectly good reason. And, you know, to Ray's credit, he has spent several years, he and his wife, in trying to learn from this incident, do things better, be a better citizen, and take matters into his own hands. And that came full circle this past Sunday. Now, I found it interesting, I think you did too, Jen, as a huge Ravens fan, that there's two ways they could have gone, right? It seemed like the Ravens were already embracing Ray to a large extent, right? For sure. He was at events, and he was, you know, being welcomed. Yeah. But this took it to a new level, right? The overt, like, honoring him, being announced on the field, being interviewed on the field, and him handling it really, really well. But I'd be curious, as a Ravens fan, what you thought. And then also, you know, I would love, we don't know, but again, what were those discussions that led to this decision to say, let's take this to a new level?
Yeah, I can, so I think it was last year, I was at a game, and they were honoring the Super Bowl team, and Ray was one of the ones that came out. And this was before, you know, anything public, really, from the Ravens. And he got an ovation from the fans, which to me, it made me kind of stop and be like, whoa. So I think he has put in time because he was so outspoken and vocal and wanting to change and, you know, wanting to put that work in. You know, we always say society likes to forgive, you know, if you're taking the right steps. So to me, it was a little awkward of a moment. I didn't hate it, it just felt awkward, right? And now fast forward to this, and I think he got the same, you know, ovation. I know there's very mixed feelings about should the team have really taken that step to publicly, a legend of the game, right? It's honoring a legend for his time on the field and off the field. I definitely have a little bit of a mixed view, of it. I think it's great that he's put in the work and he's doing all of this stuff. And he was a very, very community-driven guy from before all that. So that was one of the shocking things.
When the whole thing went down, you couldn't believe of all the players on the Ravens, he would probably be the last person you would suspect.
Yeah, so he really did do a lot, you know, for the community before all of that went down. And so it's great to see him and his wife, you know, have worked through it. I hope that it's real.
Yeah, you know. Definitely. I think you have to commend both Ray Rice and the organization for being brave enough.
Yeah.
Ray was brave enough to tackle this and was brave enough to try to come back from it, right, and do the right things. The Ravens were brave enough to say once Ray had proven that he had was changed man, at least in their eyes, then they were brave enough to bring him back and welcome him. And those are two things to commend them for. You're never going to make everybody happy. And totally understand some people not being, you know, not feeling great about this. Yeah. It's a tough situation. But in the end of the day, you know, I think the organization made the decision they felt they were most comfortable with, and you got to commend them for that. It would have been easier to just shut him out.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think the bottom line is, too, that it now puts it behind them, right? There's no question whether Ray Rice is part of the family or not. He's part of the family. And we do know one thing. It didn't go without a lot of planning and a lot of internal discussion because that's what they do. And they do it all well. They think through all those possible scenarios and any possible ramifications.
Yeah, and John, I would say that I think, you know, again, they made a conscious decision here from a PR standpoint. A lot of people would say, oh, this is just for PR. Well, you know what? It could have backfired on them too. But, you know, so it wasn't just for PR.
No.
You know, they were trying to bring somebody back into the fold who they cared about.
Yeah, agreed. That's a good point. Because PR was like, it's not overtly. No. There were some risk involved as
Big
well.
Time.
The last thing I want to touch on is what's going on right now in college football with the bowl games. And it's been really interesting to watch. Look, I know enough about how bowl games work to be dangerous, right? I'm a fan. And now with the playoff and the playoff expanding next year, it's quite exciting. The two playoff games were off the hook. Great. The championship game with Michigan and Washington is going to be crazy, and the viewership's going to be nuts. It's really about the other bowl games, right? And well, how they are being diminished by the playoff and how they're being diminished by the transfer portal. And because they're being diminished by the playoff, all these kids not playing, Look at what happened between Georgia and Florida State. That was not indicative of what a Georgia-Florida State matchup should have been if the game had more significance. And you even had the Georgia coach, Kirby Smart, coming out afterward, his team winning by 50 points, saying, it's got to be fixed. I'm not sure how it gets fixed, except you got to expand that playoff pool pretty significantly. We'll see how it evolves. So there's maybe 24 teams in this playoff pool instead of, you know. But those bowl games, and then the last thing, I'll let you guys chime in. I'll go on a rant here. But, you know, those bowl games, you got to remember, too, a lot of these kids will never play after this bowl game. It's their last college football experience, right? They're not all NFL or even USFL or Canadian Football League players, right? Yeah. They are college football players wrapping up the career. And these bowl games are significant to them. You know, Maryland won a big bowl game over Auburn. Most of that Maryland football team is done playing if they're seniors. And that's a big deal for them. So you don't want to just say, well, eliminate these bowl games because, you know, they don't mean it. Well, they mean a lot to these kids who have worked their asses off and these coaching staffs.
Yeah, you know, look, these bowl games serve a number of purposes. I mean, they have always been a reward for these teams historically, but and you're right, John, that for the guys that are never going to play again, this is a big deal. But it's also a big deal for some of the communities. You know, we here in Maryland, you know, they had the Military Bowl, and Annapolis turned out for that, and it was a great event, and the pouring down rain, the place was packed, and those mean something to these organizations, to these cities and towns. They also all have a charitable component to them, you know, and so these bowl games serve a purpose. You're right. The Pandora's box is open now because, you know, if you're not in the college football playoffs, then you're taking a big step down, right? And next year they're going to expand it. But you're right. I mean, the only way to really make it work for everyone that's in it is to make this a big, big tournament similar to the basketball tournament.
Yeah. I'd even argue, though, that the transfer portal has a little bit, I think, more could be more of an effect because, you know, the younger kids are choosing not to play or go into the transfer portal, and that's diminishing the bowl game for the, you know, for the
Jen, I think you're 100% right. And right. I saw somebody make a really good suggestion. They basically said you get one transfer. And then after that, you have to sit out a year. So instead of transferring every year.
Yeah.
Coaches are finding it really hard now, too, because you got to recruit your own players. Like, you're not worried about recruiting the high school kids. You're not recruiting your own guys to stick around. And look, as a fan, as alum, right? I'm a St. John's alum, right? We won last night, beat Butler. And, you know, I love watching, you know, Rick Pitino coach and these young guys. But we have 12 guys, and 11 of them are new.
Right.
So,
building a team.
Yeah, something, right? Some math like that, right? And so it's crazy. So you get to understand and know them and root for them, but I don't know how many are going to be here next year. And so you want to, I know it's college kids and whatnot, and they should have some freedoms to move around and capitalize on their limited time, but there's got to be a balance here.
I mean, these mid-major schools are the ones that are, they're essentially becoming AAA farm clubs.
Yeah.
You know, because the best players in these mid-major schools are moving on up to the St. John's of the world, the Georgetown's, you know, that kind of thing. And they have to, you know, the mid-major has to replenish again. So where does it end, right?
We saw it from the bowl game perspective and just with JMU, where I went, you know, they had this incredible season because they're moving into a different championship. There was some controversy about the bowl, but they ended up making a bowl game, and then a lot of the players put in for the transfer portal because they had such an amazing season, and it diminished this.
I also saw another suggestion, delay the transfer portal. Yes. The date has to move back to February 1, right? And I think there's a lot of potential solutions. I just think the problem right now is who's driving the bus, right?
Well, it's never been
NCAA is just, you know,
from the beginning,
neutered. And now you got the bowl committees that hold supreme power. You got television that holds supreme power. So, I mean, I don't know what the solution is, but something needs to be the solution. To your point about mid-majors, you're right. With the, so, you know, two of the best players on St. John's this year are Ivy League transfers. One kid's from Harvard, the other kid's from Penn, and they've been great contributors. But, you know, they knew if they wanted to play Big East basketball, have a shot at the NBA, whatever, or play in Europe, they needed to get out from under the Ivy. You never thought, I'd get out from under the Ivy League, right? But for basketball, yes, and that's how it works. So.
Yeah, no doubt.
I think the PR people at teams talk about that for challenges they face now, you know?
The SIDs and the PR teams at schools really have their hands full, and for reasons like this, right? They're not building relationships. They're not growing with these kids. The one-and-done thing. We saw it starting a few years ago. College sports is still incredible. And the numbers, you saw the numbers on those bowl games has been, they're pretty good and they're pretty significant. I think all the points you raised about community and the meaning, what it means to the schools themselves is all real. They need to fix a few of these things to keep them relevant, to keep them meaningful.
Yeah, I mean, they have, you know, you just don't want to break it and break the system that was working to a point, and now, but you have to balance the players, right? Their freedoms, and so it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, their freedoms, and then, like, to your point, John, of, like, these seniors that are their last time to play, and they just want to play. Like, they just want to play and get back to the actual game itself, not the what's next, where am I going, where am I playing, where am I making my money? You know, that's a really tough battle with when you look at college sports and that purity.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's, I mean, I think we still all, there, you know, but it,
those of us who've watched college athletics for a long time have still romanticized a little bit about it, and a lot of the romance is gone. But it doesn't mean that the competitive nature needs to be gone. I mean, and the structure needs to be blown up, right? I think there could be some solutions, such as expanding the playoffs, keeping some of the smaller, understanding the importance of the smaller bowls, whether you like them or not.
Right.
You know, moving back to transfer portal dates so some of these kids decide to stick around and play. You know, so there we are. That's our little sports rant for today, a little post-holiday sports rant. There's a lot going on. We want to touch on it. One last thing, too. Here in Baltimore, Ravens win their division. Orioles win their division. First time ever in 1 year that has happened. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. Not too bad. These organizations are all heading in the right direction. So great stuff. Go Ravens in the postseason. And go Jets in the offseason, because that's what we do. And congrats.
Great offseasons.
Yeah, we own the offseason, baby. That's where we shine. Us and the Commanders. My buddy's a Commanders fan. We always talk about how we dominate the offseason. So here it comes. Anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We will see you soon, and we'll get back to drinking those beers. Follow us at MaroonPR. Give us a listen. Give us a share. And give us a suggestion if you have it. Thanks for watching. See ya. Thanks for listening to Spin is a Four-Letter Word. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe. Send us your feedback, too. We want this to be interesting for everybody. And give us a follow at MaroonPR on Twitter and LinkedIn.